morning, and I will try to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Michael Bourne, 38464. With me at council table is Nicole Daniels. May it please the court. Colorado Supreme Court has stated as a general principle that the trial court should encourage the disposition of litigation on the merits rather than on the imposition of technical rules. Now, in the present case, the equities are clearly on the side of the appellant. In addition, it's also clear that the trial court erred and abused its discretion in several ways, which I will address momentarily. Furthermore, trial court acted in a manner to make the status of the case pending before unclear to the parties involved in the litigation. The facts here are simple. This case arises out of a rear-end auto accident which occurred on March 16th, 2005. Now, plaintiff's counsel would later discover that the rear-end driver, Mr. Ricardo Alvarez, somehow provided, and in this case was dismissed, so we haven't gone through any discovery, but so far the record does show that Mr. Alvarez somehow provided an invalid driver's license or driver's license number to the police officers that responded to the scene of the accident. And apparently Mr. Alvarez has a lifestyle that was not conducive to finding him. He didn't show up in many public records.
How much of that is actually in evidenced in the record with documents, affidavits, as opposed to just assertions in briefs?
Right. It's there's no affidavit, but included in the record as an attachment to one of the motions filed in response was a email from a private investigator who ultimately did find, at least as far as we know, the correct Ricardo Alvarez. So according to her, the driver's license number on the police report is not contained in the Department of Motor Vehicles records. So that's all we have at this point in the record of the case.
And as far as the lifestyle, there's nothing in the record?
Well, besides what she found out about Mr. Alvarez, that I believe I have her email here.
Well, if it's not an affidavit, it's not evidence.
Well, I guess in the present situation, affidavit would be hearsay before us also. So suit was first, there's two cases here. Suit was first filed in this matter on October 6, 2006. This is the first case, filed in Denver District Court. Eventually, this one was dismissed for failure to prosecute, dismissed without prejudice by the trial court judge. The case was subsequently refiled in July of 2007. Same case, same party, same facts, filed again. As evidenced by the proceedings, plaintiff had continued to have a difficult time finding this guy. Mr. Alvarez was eventually located 3 days before the statute of limitations did run. The facts are a little bit confusing because there's, at the very least, two separate orders of dismissal in this case.
One order was automatic, is that true, under the January 08 order?
Well,
except the case would be dismissed within the end of 60 days.
Well, that's in the January order from the trial court. The trial court said you have 60 more days to file return of service in this matter. Also, no further extensions would be granted, and this course would be dismissed without further notice.
And okay. At that time, though, you didn't respond within the 60 days.
Correct. Return of service was filed about a week after the 60 days expired. It was filed on March 13th, 2008. The 60 days would have expired on March 2nd or 3rd of 2008. So it was a few days before. But importantly, that order that order was deficient on its face, and I'll address that issue in a moment. But additionally, the trial court did two things to lead to confusion in this case. There was never an order of dismissal after that. After the 60 days had run, the court never put in an order of dismissal. Second, even easier than that, the clerk never closed the case. It was sitting there on file and serve as an active case. There was no indication case closed or anything like that. The court did nothing between the expiration of that 60 days that it gave in the January order until much later, till April, when it finally ruled saying this case is now dismissed. So to hop on forward to the actions of the trial court, first of all, it specifically said, the trial court said in the order, the April 16th, 2008, which was about a month after Mr. Alvarez was served, specifically said in its order that it is considering extensions granted, and it's considering this previous case that was filed in Denver District Court and dismissed. So it considered the proceedings in this 2006 case in the case that we're here for today.
Well, why is that inappropriate? The court can take judicial notice of its own files.
Right, but the court does not have authority to review what it was a different trial judge assigned to that 06 case, and the court doesn't have authority to make decisions based on decisions made by court of coordinate jurisdiction, another trial court. It can't review the decision made at the trial court level. Secondly, there was some confusion at the trial court level. Plaintiff filed a response to the motion to dismiss and quash service. For some reason, the judge in his April 16th order didn't receive that or something, so he didn't consider plaintiff's response. After plaintiff filed a motion to reconsider, he did. But one thing the judge didn't address in any of his decisions was the false driver's license number given to the police at the scene. Court never considered the bad acts, if you will, of the defendant. The trial court further, and recently the Coe case has been decided by the Colorado Court of Appeals. In his order, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, the January 08 order, the court said 60-day extension, no further extensions would be granted. According to Coe, you have to do two things. You have to give notice, in Coe it says 30 days, here we had 60. But further, you have to allow plaintiff to show cause why the case should not be dismissed. Here, on its face, the order did no further extensions would be granted. And in the present case, the plaintiff at least had the argument available to him, hey, false information, this guy's difficult to locate by his own actions.
So are you saying the requirement is actually a show cause order rather than an opportunity to show cause?
Well, not necessarily. Certainly a show cause order would issued 30 days before dismissal would have taken effect, would have been great. It would have been very clear. But in saying no further extension would be granted, to cut off any potential argument, hey, please grant one further extension for this reason.
Why couldn't you have come in within the 60 days and argue to the court that you have good cause, and the good cause is bring in your witness. Your witness talks about how she's beat the pavement and looked through all the records, and she's hot on his heels.
Well, in the order itself, it gave us no option to do that. Plaintiff did ultimately argue this is why a further extension should be granted. Plaintiff did file a motion for extension of time once plaintiff realized the court made its April 16th ruling. Actually, plaintiff argued that before that, but it wasn't considered. It was after the motion for reconsideration was filed.
So you did submit something, but was that, and that was within the 60
days? It was after the 60 days.
It was after the 60 days.
Correct.
Now, it seems to me that an essential piece of your case is that the return of service that you did submit was a valid service. Was it a valid service?
That issue was never addressed by the trial court. He never went into the validity of the service. Upon information and belief, we did serve the right guy. Defendant argues in their brief that the service was invalid, even though that wasn't really an issue taken up by the trial court judge. I will say, in a hurry to get this particular defendant served, defendant is arguing that the service was invalid because it had the wrong case number on it. It had the 2006 case number on the document that was served to Mr. Alvarez. The defendant doesn't point out is that it was the correct complaint, same facts, same party, same accident, served on him. And defendant has provided no case law saying that that's deficient service. Colorado notice pleading state, what was served on the defendant was plenty to give notice, not only the lawsuit was pending, but of the specific facts and allegations, times, and parties involved.
You indicated you wanted to save 5 minutes.
Yes, Your Honor, I will save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Good morning. I'm Gwendolyn Wahlberg, attorney number 13056 on behalf of Mr. Alvarez. I think probably special appearance on behalf of Mr. Alvarez on the grounds that we're not convinced that he's actually subject to the jurisdiction of the court. In response to the comments that have been made this morning and the questions that were asked, I think that the question of whether or not there is evidence in the record of good cause for failure to serve within the time allotted by the court is a critical one, because there isn't any. Even the copy of the email that was submitted in some effort to establish that there was a reasonable undertaking to locate the correct Mr. Alvarez and serve him in a timely manner actually doesn't provide any information to that effect. If the court will look at it, it's, I think, in the record at around page 65. It's a document that has a fair number of blacked out lines in it, apparently redacting certain information that that was not disclosed for reasons that we weren't provided in the briefs. But what's important in looking at it is that it doesn't give any information about how long this particular private investigator had been looking for Mr. Alvarez. It doesn't say where she had looked. It doesn't say how she determined or what determined that the driver's license number that she was using was invalid, whether that was because it had been suspended or because it had been replaced by a new license with a different number, or because perhaps the police officer transcribed the number incorrectly on the report. There's absolutely no information, much less evidence, as to what exactly the plaintiff did to attempt to locate Mr. Alvarez. There's no indication of why they couldn't. There's a statement in there that the address given was actually Mr. Alvarez's cousin, and that address was in fact on the driver's license, but that he wasn't there at the time that they found him in 2008. But there's very little information even in there, even assuming it was an affidavit, which it's not. There's no indication that Mr. Alvarez was himself hiding from anyone. There's only indication that the plaintiff either didn't bother or didn't try hard enough to locate him in the time frame that was allowed by either the first judge, Judge Rivera, or the second judge, Judge Martinez. And I think there's another point that was made in terms of question is whether or not Judge Martinez had authority to review the information in the pleading, in the court file pertaining to Judge Rivera's ruling. The case law that's cited in the brief concerning whether a district court has authority to review decisions of another district court is case law that addresses the question of whether one district court can overturn or alter a decision of a prior district court, not whether a district court may take judicial notice of a decision or of an outcome by another district court. Of course, the judge in this case had the authority to look back and say, here are facts which are relevant to me. This plaintiff has filed another case, has twice been afforded extensions of time to obtain service on this defendant in that case. And in that case, twice, the judge said, here's your extension of time, here's when I want to have service by, and in that case, there was no service obtained, and eventually, that judge also dismissed the case. So there was evidence before this court as to how much of a delay and how much burden had been placed on the judicial system in the city and county of Denver by this plaintiff failing to pursue, or at least to provide any evidence that they had been pursuing Mr. Alvarez with due diligence and attempting to locate him to obtain service. I think the the allegation here that Mr. Alvarez was engaged in bad acts and that somehow precipitated the lack of service in a timely manner is simply, there's absolutely no evidence in the record of that, that Mr. Alvarez did anything to avoid service, to avoid detection, to avoid anything. There's information in the email that maybe there was some incorrect information out there, but the source of it or how it came to impact their ability to find him is nowhere found. There was an argument made that the validity of service was not addressed by the trial court. I think that's incorrect. I think if you look at the trial court's order, especially the second written order, which I think was issued May the 23rd, the judge in fact says, I don't have jurisdiction. I don't think there's been service here. And that was because in those pleadings that were eventually filed, the defendant pointed out that an incorrect complaint had been served, that the defendant, even if this were the correct defendant, and that issue was not raised one way or the other, but the defendant, even if it were the correct defendant, had been served with a document which had an incorrect case number on it. So if the defendant receiving these documents had phoned the court or contacted the court to try to determine the status of that lawsuit, he would have been advised that that lawsuit had been dismissed by Judge Rivera back in, I think, October of 2006. So the information that was given to the defendant, if in fact the defendant was served, was that he was being requested to appear in a case that had been dismissed. But more importantly, I think the court needs to look at the rule, which is the rule concerning service of process, which says, Rule 4, I have it, I found it, specifically, except in the case of service by publication or when otherwise ordered by the court, the complaint shall be served with the summons. The complaint which was served with the summons was not the complaint in this suit. It was of no more effect than if they had served a complaint in a completely different matter, or if they had served some other document which didn't pertain to this action. They served an incorrect document. It was not compliant with Rule 4. They did not serve him with the complaint. They served him with another document pertaining to another civil action. And in that case, I think the court observed, and I think I have Judge Martinez's order, or at least the language of it. By this order, having considered plaintiff's response to the motion in due course, the court now reiterates its prior ruling on the motion to dismiss. This court lacks jurisdiction as plaintiff has simply failed, after multiple efforts and multiple filings of virtually the same case, to comply with this court's delay reduction order. Plaintiff has failed to prove proper service on the defendant and has failed to procure service. So the court looked at this and said, there is no service. They've served a wrong document, or they've served something that doesn't amount to service. In this case, there is no service.
Had you raised that argument to the trial court before that order was entered?
Yes. And I think there's a perhaps confusion in terms of how this case has been argued and addressed by all of the parties to the case. There's a lot of reference to the delay reduction order and to Rule 41 in terms of a sua sponte dismissal of a case for failure to prosecute by a court, and arguments by the plaintiff here that if Judge Martinez were going to dismiss this case sua sponte under 41B2, he would need to issue a show cause order or somehow afford the plaintiff an opportunity to respond. In this case, actually, there were motions to dismiss filed by the defendant. There was a motion, especially a special appearance that said, look, we thought this case was already dismissed pursuant to the January 2 order that said you've got 60 more days and then it's done. It appears now that they filed a return of service that the court may, in fact, consider that the case is still active on the docket. We want this case dismissed, or the defendant wants this case dismissed, because there has been failure to comply. There has been repeated failure to comply with orders of this court, and there has been repeated failure to pursue proper service of process. In terms of the facts of this case, I think if the court really looks at what happened, the second complaint was filed in July. There was an alleged service in July shortly after the complaint was filed. According to the affidavit of the person who lived in the home where the service was allegedly affected, that woman called the plaintiff's counsel and said, you have the wrong person. This is not the Ricardo Alvarez that's referenced in these documents. You have the wrong person. And that information was conveyed to the plaintiff's office in July of, I'm thinking 2007, I don't have good years on my, but shortly after the complaint was filed and shortly after the service was allegedly affected. Then, in spite of the delay reduction order, which said file returns of service by 60 days after August 2nd, no return of service of any kind was filed until November. Then the plaintiff, after the expiration of that time, comes in and files a motion for extension of time to file the return of service, which they've allegedly had in their possession now for 60 or 90 days, but which they didn't file. And the return of service, which they've allegedly had in their possession, they have at least some notice, was not valid because the person who lived in that location said, wrong Ricardo Alvarez. So they're late filing it. They should have known that it was incorrect, or that there was at least a question as to whether it was correct, and they did nothing but file it late. Defendant sent an investigator to that location, found out that that person was not the Ricardo Alvarez named in the complaint, filed a motion saying, quash this service because it's incorrect. Defendant or plaintiff never responded to that motion at all. They ignored it completely. Eventually, the court granted their originally requested extension to file the service return, but without determining whether that service return was valid. Then, since there was no response, eventually the court says, well, okay, the service wasn't valid, I'm going to give them some more time. They had another 60 days during which they didn't do anything. And then after that 60 days has run, before that 60 days has run, they don't come into the court and say, look, we do have this investigator, here's the affidavit, here's what she's done, here's where she's looked. We can't find this guy, he's changed addresses 6 times, he's left his employment 4 times. We have none of that information. They wait until after the 60 days expires, and then they come back in again and say, oh, well, here we've got this guy, but we were in a big rush to get it served, so we served the wrong document, but no worries, it's close enough. Well, it's not close enough. It doesn't pertain to this lawsuit. It pertains to another one that's not even active on the court's dockets anymore. So what happened in this case is the defendant, through special appearance, came in and said, look, enough here. And there were then and if you look, the new case that was cited in the reply brief,
Kumar,
really is a case where the court issued a delay reduction order and nothing happened. And after 9 months, the court said, case dismissed. There was none of this motion for extension, file an invalid service, another motion for extension, a motion to dismiss by the defendants. There was none of that stuff going on in Kumar. That was simply a case where the court said, I gave you notice 9 months ago, you didn't do anything, you're dead in the water. If you look at the Powers versus the PRCA case, I think you'll see a case where the court looked at whether an opportunity to respond to a proposed dismissal for failure to prosecute or for failure to provide proper evidence of service was considered by the court. In the Powers versus PRCA case, the plaintiff came in shortly before a trial date and attempted to dismiss without prejudice. And the defendant objected. And the court then considered the defendant's objection as a motion to dismiss for failure to prosecute. And on review, the Court of Appeals said, well, the plaintiff did have the opportunity to respond more than once to the arguments by the defendant that his actions were a failure to prosecute. And given that those opportunities were provided, we consider that Rule 121, Section 110 was complied with in that the plaintiff in this case did have the opportunity to respond, even though it wasn't in necessarily the order to show cause, 30-day timeframe response and ruling in that way. It was an effective opportunity for the plaintiff in that case to establish whether he had or hadn't attempted to proceed with due diligence. In this case, I don't think there's any evidence of due diligence. I don't think there's any evidence of good cause why they couldn't have served in a timely manner. And I don't think there's any evidence that, in fact, the service was ever proper. That's all I have. If you have questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
I want to address several issues that were raised. First, the Kumar case. Here we have a lot more action by the plaintiff. Remember, this January 2nd order was sua sponte by the trial court. There was no pending motion to dismiss. There was a special appearance to cross service, but the court, there was no motion to dismiss pending, and that order was not in response to that. Here, instead of the case just sitting for 9 months, plaintiff served a guy they thought was the right guy early off the bat and filed several extensions with the court to keep the court appraised of what's going on. So this isn't a situation where the court just sat there for 9 months and the judge dismissed it. Further, in Kumar, you know, the delay reduction order itself wasn't sufficient notice, according to the Court of Appeals. Here again, especially in the brief, but also in oral argument, defendant relies on this delay reduction order as to bolster their argument, when that's not a proper inquiry, according to Kumar.
Counsel, your client was given two separate orders, though, is that right? First, the delay reduction after the complaint was filed, and then, of course, the January order telling you that you must do something within 60 days.
The January order would be the second, and the delay reduction order is the general one that comes out in your cases. You got to serve within 60 days. And the second one is the January 2nd order, 60 days, no further extensions. Correct.
So why doesn't that take Kumar out of the equation? Because in Kumar, there was not, you know, essentially a second warning that the case would be dismissed. Here, as of early January, the court says to your client, serve in 60 days or the case shall be dismissed without further notice. Why doesn't that alone satisfy Kumar?
Because the court brooked no further argument on the issue by issuing that order. That was a 60 days, it's over. No opportunity for plaintiff to come in and say, hey, I'm showing cause why this case should not be dismissed.
They could not have your client could not have responded within the 60 days?
Well, according to the order, no further extensions would be granted. That was the judge's ruling in the January order.
But you could have, you could have responded stating what was pending or going on insofar as making an effort to comply with the order.
And the plaintiff did eventually respond, but it was outside the 60 days.
Yeah.
The confusion came. The timing in this case was a little unusual because the 60 days expired right before the statute, but there's a little bit of time between the two. Now, even the defendant suggests, hey, plaintiff should have just filed another case. Well, in retrospect, maybe so, but then you have the possibility of having two active cases going at once, since no official order of dismissal came down, and the July 2007 case was never closed on Lexis. There was this gray area based on the fact that those days were probably so close to one another. Further, just one issue, the court dismissed the case with prejudice in its final order, adjudicating the case on its merits. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, let me ask you another question. You said that before the 60 days expired, you had filed something with the court.
The plaintiff attempted to show cause why the case should not be dismissed outside that 60 days put forth in the January 2nd order.
It was outside of the 60 days.
It was outside the 60 days.
But it was before the first order of dismissal where the court said you hadn't,
correct,
you hadn't pled. And then you said, yes, I had. And you explained that you had pled between the March 13th date or the March 2nd or 3rd date and the date of the first dismissal or whatever dismissal is.
Correct, Your Honor. It was outside the 60 days, but it was before that April 16th order where the court stated case is now dismissed.
Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course. That